Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, July 2nd, 2012. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Rural counties get one-year extension of federal Secure Rural Schools Act. Western Washington tribes might go to court over treaty fishing rights. City considers making farmers market move to Main Street permanent. And Moscow police are concerned about the theft of street signs over the last year and are offering a short amnesty period for their return. We'll have details on these stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Western Washington tribes are saying they may take the tribal treaty rights they have to court if the federal government doesn't do enough to save salmon habitat. Treaties signed with the tribes in 1854 and 1855 ceded most of Washington state to Europeans in exchange for perpetual fishing rights outside of reservation boundaries. However, 20 Western Washington treaty tribes are frustrated because the federal government has not made sufficient progress recovering Puget Sound and coastal salmon runs. Many important runs continue to decline, in part because of reduced spawning habitat. Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission Chair Bill Frank, Jr. of the Nisqually tribe, said, "We're on a course that's going down. If we don't turn it around, there's not going to be anything left. We have to turn it around." The White House Council on Environmental Quality has told the National Atmospheric Administration, the EPA, and the Department of Agriculture, which runs the Forest Service, to come up with a plan to deal with tribal treaty rights concerns. And in May, the three agencies decided to use their collective regulatory authority to protect salmon habitat. They also said they would use incentive programs to restore habitat. They said they will hold a forum with the tribes to deal with local habitat issues as well. NOAA Marine Fisheries Service Assistant Regional Administrator Bob Turner said, "We need to do something to reverse the trends. We aren't gaining ground on habitat productivity. We are not in disagreement about the goal or concern." The agencies and tribes have listed a number of factors in the loss of treaty rights and salmon habitat. They include logging, loss of wetlands, overfishing, shoreline bulkheads, and pollution. Volunteers with the Idaho Interfaith Roundtable Against Hunger and other community groups were in grocery stores over the weekend collecting signatures for a petition asking lawmakers to stagger the distribution date of food stamps in the state. The groups say issuing food stamps to Idaho's nearly 250,000 food stamp recipients all on the same day creates long checkout lines. Supporters of the change, including the Northwest Grocers Association and Winco Foods, say some shoppers abandon shopping carts because of the long lines, rendering $1 million in refrigerated or frozen food unsellable. A bill that would stagger the food stamp distribution day passed in the Idaho House 55-12 this year, but did not get a hearing in the Senate. Crews in central Montana have the Dahl Fire south of Roundup 75% contained. The 22,000-acre fire has burned 73 homes and 150 outbuildings. Montana has 10 large wildfires currently, more than Colorado, which has 7, and Utah, which has 8. At the Dahl Fire, crews were preparing for high winds and lightning Sunday night, but an approaching storm turned away before it hit the area. In Wyoming, 420 people are fighting the 45,000-acre Fontanelle Fire in the Bridger-Teton National Forest. The city of Moscow says it will cost the city $13,000 to replace 109 street signs stolen during the last year Police Chief David Duke says missing street signs can endanger lives if the first responders, such as fire crews or ambulance crews, have trouble finding an address. Missing signs can also cause traffic collisions. Duke says the missing signs include larger traffic signs as well as smaller street name signs. He says police have identified three motives for stealing street signs: collecting keepsakes of life in Moscow, pranks, and more recently, to collect money from scrap metal dealers. Those caught with stolen street signs can face up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. Duke has announced a short amnesty period in which people with street signs can drop them off at the front gate of the City of Moscow Street Shop by Wednesday, July 11th, and no questions will be asked or charges pursued. The Moscow Street Shop is located at 650 North Van Buren Street. Chief Duke is also asking those who know the location of stolen street signs to call 882-COPS or 882-2677. The Moscow Arts Commission has announced they will extend the temporary relocation of the Saturday Farmers Market to Main Street for one more week to include the July 7th market. A press release from City Supervisor Gary Riedner says the temporary relocation of the Moscow Farmers Market has resulted in an overwhelmingly positive response from citizens. Riedner also said the Arts Commission will hold a public feedback session on the Farmers Market location on Tuesday, July 10th at 5:30 p.m. at City Hall. The public feedback session will follow a short Arts Commission meeting dealing with other business starting at 5 p.m. The Saturday Farmers Market was temporarily moved from the city-owned Jackson Street parking lot on June 16th so crews could install new light fixtures. Under the new configuration, market stalls are mostly located on Main Street in the street parking slots, and motor vehicles are not allowed on Main Street between 3rd and 5th Streets during the market. During the past 2 weeks, KRFP interviewed merchants, vendors, and customers at the farmers market and heard mostly favorable comments about the new configuration. This past Saturday, I asked Farmers Market Manager Barry McGarrah how the new location has worked out from the city's point of view.
Things from a managing point of view, it's been pretty smooth and had a great turnout the last 3 weeks we've been down here. And the public has had a ton of feedback and comments as far as the market being located here versus the parking lot. So we feel like it's gone really smooth and as well as I think it could have gone.
Okay, and the electrical outlets, which seemed to be an issue 2 years ago when people were suggesting this, that's worked out.
Yeah. So Friendship Square here has got several different power outlets. And so people, whoever needs power, we can satisfy their need for power right here around Friendship Square.
And tell me about the fact that the city has decided to extend the Main Street alignment test period, I guess you could call it a test period, for the Farmers Market one more week for Saturday, July 7th as well. And that's not because construction's not done, because the construction is done.
Yeah, so the City Council has decided to extend our period here on Main Street for one more week to get the public's feedback and comments on the location, on the atmosphere. And so they extended that, and then they also sent out a survey to the general public to ask for feedback and comments from them so they can get a good idea of how the public is enjoying the market being on Main Street versus the parking lot.
Okay, and tell me the methods of the survey.
Yeah, so they sent it out online, and so if anybody who's on the email got the survey, they can download it, they can fill it out, they can send it back via email or snail mail. And if somebody wasn't on the email list, they can go to the city website, they can stop by City Hall, and they can talk to the Arts Department, has the surveys there printed out, so someone can get that if they'd like it.
Okay, and I understand the Arts Commission is having a public input session at their regular meeting July 10th, and that's also sort of a take-the-survey sort of thing.
Yeah, to get feedback from the public about their feelings about the market being on Main Street. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. And the email I got last night saying that they were going to have the special meeting and extend it for another week also implied that reaction has been, I don't know if they used the word overwhelmingly, but they said very positive.
Yeah, the stack of comment cards that has come in has been pretty drastic between the people that really like it and the people that don't like it that much. So the stack of comment cards by itself tells a telling story.
Okay, you say it's been equally divided?
No. Our stack of comment cards saying how positive people have liked it is significantly larger than the comments that we've got of people that don't like it so much.
Okay, and are a lot of people mentioning the lack of moving motor vehicles during the market on Main Street?
A few here and there. Not. I haven't got too many people talking to me about that. So no, the Main Street being shut down. I haven't personally heard too much negative comments about that happening.
That was Moscow Farmers Market Manager Barry McGarra speaking at Saturday's Farmers Market on Main Street in downtown Moscow. The Washington Supreme Court issued a temporary stay Friday night, saying the state can tax roll-your-own cigarettes for now. The new tax on loose tobacco was set to go into effect yesterday. A manufacturer of cigarette rolling machines, a retailer, and a smoker all sued the state, saying the tax needed to be approved by 2/3 of the Washington legislature under a standing citizens initiative requiring supermajorities. Lawmakers said they were merely closing a loophole in the state's current cigarette tax and not creating a new tax. The loose tobacco taxes passed by a 2/3 majority in the House earlier this year, but only got a simple majority in the Senate. The state high court said the temporary stay will remain in effect until after it considers the issue more thoroughly on Tuesday, July 10th. The lower taxes on roll-your-own cigarettes has spawned a small industry in which 65 stores specialize in selling loose tobacco and related products, employing 250 people statewide. Rural counties with a lot of federal land got a one-year extension of the Secure Rural Schools Act Friday when Congress approved a compromise version of the transportation bill. The Secure Rural Schools Act, which was also known as the Craig Wyden Bill, passed in 2000. Since that year, the federal government has provided $3 billion to rural counties based on a percentage of fees paid to the federal government by resource extraction industries who lease federal land. Funding under the Secure Rural Schools Act has fallen off recently, and some county governments and school districts have already begun planning their budgets based on the assumption the program would be dead this year. However, with the bill's renewal for one more year, 700 rural communities in 41 states will receive $346 million. Local governments in Idaho will receive $27.4 million, and Washington governments will get $21.3 million. Oregon will receive the most, $100 million. Republican U.S. Representative Greg Walden of Oregon said, "This is obviously a lifeline, but not a solution. It is getting very, very, very difficult to fund this program, and frankly, the local governments are frustrated at the sort of yo-yo effect they have to go through depending on direct payments from Congress. Members of Congress are also trying to find a path to create a more stable funding source to help rural communities. There have been three bills designed to increase logging on federal land moving forward in the U.S. House, but they are unlikely to gain any traction in the Senate. One bill authored by Republican House Resources Committee Chair Doc Hastings of Central Washington would require the Forest Service to sell enough timber to generate $500 million for local governments. Hastings' bill would allow the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture to ignore environmental laws when allowing timber cutting in the counties that would benefit from Secure Rural Schools money. Republican Representative Raul Labrador of Idaho has a bill that would create a nationwide system for allowing state governments to control logging on federal land using less strict state environmental laws. A third bill only targets Oregon and would turn over 2.6 million federal acres to a state-run land trust. Democratic U.S. Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon told the Associated Press, "I think the instant your central policy is that you are going to say the states are going to take control over federal lands, you've got a real challenge on your hands. I'd rather look to something that can build a more natural coalition, which is to have people who use and extract from public lands, in effect, take a creative approach that doesn't prejudge any one solution." You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP in Moscow. Idaho Governor C.L. Butch Otter says he wants public comments on the recommendations recently released by his sage-grouse task force. The task force's plan is expected to go to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service after Otter signs off on it. A federal judge recently ordered the Fish and Wildlife Service to decide by 2015 whether or not to list the chicken-sized bird under the Endangered Species Act. In 2010, the agency ruled that while the sage-grouse deserves protection, other species were a higher priority for listing. Biodiversity groups sued, and the courts ruled the agency must move forward. Governor Otter's task force recommended splitting the state into three sage-grouse recovery areas. The proposal would put the most stringent land use restrictions in the species' core recovery zone. Restrictions would include limiting power transmission lines, wind and solar production, and ranching. Otter said the public can read the 38-page recommendation and make comments through the Idaho Fish and Game website. The Bureau of Land Management has accepted a $1.10 per ton offer from Peabody Coal of St. Louis to strip mine the North Porcupine Coal Tract in Wyoming's Powder River Basin. The company would also pay a 12.5% royalty on the 721 million tons of coal it expects to extract there. BLM spokesperson Mae Wilson told the Associated Press the Peabody offer was equal to or more than the coal's market value. However, the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis, which is an environmental research group, says taxpayers will be on the hook for $1.2 billion because the coal is worth twice as much as Peabody offered. Peabody is the largest of several coal mining multinationals that want to extract Powder River Basin coal in Wyoming and eastern Montana and ship it to ports in Oregon and Washington to be placed on barges and sent to the Far East. Environmental groups are raising the alarm about the coal's potential impact on global climate, plus the effects of hundreds of coal trains per day on local communities along the routes to the West Coast. They say Sandpoint, Idaho, and Spokane are likely to be most severely impacted. Fire crews in Pocatello are aiming to fully contain the Charlotte fire today. The fire, which burned 66 homes Friday, was 80% contained yesterday morning, with plans for crews to attack the fire during the day Sunday. In addition to the burned homes, over 1,000 people were evacuated from Pocatello neighborhoods and the small community of Mink Creek. Because of bone-dry conditions in area grass and sagebrush, the Charlotte fire spread rapidly and burned about 1.5 square miles. The Bureau of Land Management placed Pocatello and parts of southern and eastern Idaho on red flag status, meaning a potentially deadly combination of low humidity, high temperatures, and wind have created dangerous conditions. Idaho officials say it would take lightning quick action and concessions by the federal government for the state to meet the November 16th deadline to submit a plan for health insurance exchanges under the federal health care overhaul that was upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court last week. Idaho insurance companies are calling for the state to take action to avoid the federal government's directive imposing its own exchange on Idaho. On Friday, Idaho Governor C.L. Butch Otter said he was holding meetings to look at all the options. options that were on the table. The governor's spokesperson, John Hannion, said there were no plans to ask advice from the Republican-dominated legislature, which trounced any effort to take steps to implement the federal reforms earlier this year. Republican Representative Janice McGeachin of Idaho Falls, who is the outgoing chair of the House Health and Welfare Committee, said accepting a federally mandated insurance exchange could be the best solution for the state. She questioned whether the insurance company's claim that health costs would skyrocket in the state wasn't motivated by profits. Blue Cross spokesperson Karen Early said insurers could offer premiums in a state-written program that would be half of what the feds would mandate, and programs would not be well-suited to Idaho's rural areas. Governor Otter declined to comment on whether the state would accept federal money to expand Medicaid to cover more low-income people. The U.S. Supreme Court declared last week the federal government could not revoke all of a state's Medicaid funding if the state declined to take part in the Medicaid expansion mandated by the federal law. Yesterday, Idaho joined 36 other states in making it illegal to review, prepare, or transmit text messages from handheld wireless devices while driving. The law, which was passed in February, took effect yesterday. Drivers caught texting will be subject to an $81.50 fine. According to testimony given to the Idaho Senate by AAA Idaho, texting was a factor in 30% of the fatal car accidents in the state over the past 3 years and 36% of serious injury accidents in the same period. The University of Idaho and the Idaho State Board of Education have rejected a $1 million settlement offer from the family of a student who was seriously injured in a fall from a fraternity window in 2009 after she had consumed alcohol at two fraternity parties. Lewiston attorney Theodore Creason filed a brief in Latah County Second District Court on behalf of the university and the Board of Education rejecting the settlement June 18th. The university and the state board are seeking summary judgment in the case, saying they did not have a responsibility to protect the then 19-year-old Amanda Andaverde from harm while she was partying at a fraternity. Fraternities and sororities are owned by private corporations. In a previous Second District Court ruling stemming from a lawsuit in the wake of a UI freshman's fall from a fraternity fire escape, the court declined to hold that the university has a relationship with students that makes them responsible for the consequences of the student's own voluntary intoxication. A hearing on the motion for summary judgment will be held by Judge Michael Griffin on August 1st. The Idaho Department of Correction expects to send some 250 male inmates to a private prison in Colorado as soon as a contract is finalized later this month. Some state prisoners are currently being housed in county jails because the state prison system is at full capacity with 8,100 inmates. If the state's prison population continues to grow at the present rate, the Department of Correction will send up to 450 prisoners a year to the Kit Carson Correctional Center in Burlington, Colorado. The facility is operated by Corrections Corporation of America, which is the nation's largest private prison company. Idaho had housed some inmates in Texas in recent years, but problems related to prison conditions prompted their return to the state. The Bureau of Land Management resumed helicopter hazing of wild horses near Reno, Nevada yesterday. 2 weeks ago, U.S. District Judge Howard McKibben granted a temporary restraining order that halted the helicopter roundups in the Jackson Mountains herd management area due to foaling season, which ended July 1st. California-based Protect Mustangs executive director Ann Novak contends the BLM isn't transparent about the number of horses who have died in the roundups and also contests the BLM's opinion that the range is too stressed for these 600-plus horses to survive. Over 400 horses have been removed from the range already. They are taken to the BLM's Palomino Valley Center north of Reno, and from there they are put up for adoption or sent to long-term pastures in the Midwest. On Friday, the Idaho Supreme Court struck down a 22-year-old state law restricting the state's ability to raise lease prices on coveted cottage sites on Priest Lake and Payette Lake. Justices said the 1990 law that protected leaseholders from having their leases auctioned competitively does not comply with the state constitutional mandate that state lands be managed for maximum profitability. The ruling stems from a 2010 lawsuit filed by people with leases at Payette Lake, contending the state's plan to raise their payments from 2.5% to 4% of the value of the land violated their right to renew their leases for another 10 years under terms identical to those in the expiring leases, as provided in a 1990 law. State Attorney General and Land Board member Lawrence Wasden filed suit challenging the 1990 law. The state lost in the 3rd District Court, but that decision was overturned Friday. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Take a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. 80% chance of showers and thunderstorms tonight. Low 51. And tomorrow, mostly clear. Low, 20% chance of showers before noon. Mostly sunny. High 67. Wind gusts from the west up to 30 miles an hour. Sustained winds 15 to 20 later in the day. Tuesday night, mostly clear, low 41, and Wednesday, 4th of July, high 74, sunny skies. Currently at the Pullman-Moscow Regional Airport, 78 degrees under fair skies. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next, Eat the Airwaves, news and opinions from the West Side, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio, and that will be followed by Climate Justice Forum, live in the studio with Helen Yost. I'm Lee Robartis. Nancy Casey assisted with tonight's newscast. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, be sure to go to the Radio Free Moscow website to find out more ways to help Radio Free Moscow, or you can become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow.